Tomas, we are back, my friend. You know what that means? Nothing says Monday like this, man. Dr. Jim and the Skinny on Options. Abstract application. Happy Monday to you, Dr. Jim.
And happy Monday to you also. Tell me more about how you're not paying Anton enough to where my man's got to scout Borscht on the side just to make ends meet. Like, I want to hear more
Borscht,
about this.
Borscht.
Yeah, yes. Borscht or Borscht?
Borscht.
Off, you, Borscht. You have to give us the Yiddish version.
So it's like Porsche, but with a B.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So tell me more about Anton cooking up some homemade borscht.
Oh, it's like, you know, it's a gift from the gods. I mean, Anton's a borscht, the borscht king.
I mean, what? I don't even know what it is. What is it?
Think of a red soup.
A beet.
So like tomato soup.
Yeah, like a beet soup.
Beet soup. Yeah.
Think of a red beet soup. That's it.
That's it. All right. So he's just making it. He's just making gallons of borscht.
Gallons of borscht.
Just slanging it.
And he goes to the villages. He goes to the villages right. And he sells it.
He's got a side. He's got a side business.
Yeah, the villages in Bradenton, Florida. Yeah, I'm familiar with these villages. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. He's got a side business at the farmer's market on weekends. He sells.
Oh, that's great.
Lots of borscht.
I mean, you know, him and Bella, they're starting the family. It's like, you got to do it, man. Like, I know what Sosnoff is paying his people. It ain't much.
Right. Got to make ends meet somehow.
You got to do it, man. He's got to moonlight somehow.
100%.
So I didn't know that the borscht business was booming, but now I'm kind of interested.
Oh, yeah. It's out there, Jim. There's a lot of business. You do a lot of things you don't know about the world, but that's one of them.
No, That's true. Speaking of that, there are a lot of things that I don't know about the world, but I'll tell you one thing I do know about the world. So this weekend, had a little movie night with Autumn, had a little movie night with the wife, and for the first time, maybe the second time in our 17-year relationship, she gave me full autonomy to choose whatever movie I wanted to choose.
Oh, no, that can't be good.
So I decided to go with, it's not even close, gentlemen. This is hands down. There is no debate. There is no argument. The best action movie from the 90s. And I'm saying this with all sincerity. This is not a joke. The best action movie from the 90s. It's like mid-90s to kind of allow you to narrow your focus a little bit. Mid-90s best action movie. Because it's more than just action. There's other things happening in the movie. What movie do you guys think we watched?
You got to give me more of a hint. I need more of a hint.
I mean, it's got three star-studded actors in it. Three.
What's the topic? What's the thing?
I can't. That gives it away. I can't. I don't know. I can't go any further than that.
I don't know. Mid-90s, I don't know.
It's got...
An action movie for you.
Action movie for me.
The suave kind of guy that you are. Ghost.
Ghost? Is that
no?
The,
I don't.
The
you got to give me more of a hint. Mid
'90s movie?
Yes.
Mid '90s.
Smooth operator, you.
Mid
'90s. I mean, that's what I did when we were. That's what I did when we were dating. I'm not doing that 15 years into marriage.
Mid '90s is too broad.
It's not necessary anymore.
Too broad.
Okay. All right. Well, it's not. I believe if I'm not.
Go,
okay.
I'm go with
if I'm not. Okay. Here, okay. Here we go.
Break
it's 96.
Point.
It's 96. I'm pretty sure it's 96.
I need more than that.
Break point.
Okay. I'll give you one more, but this is probably going to give it away. It involves some kind of prison break.
The Rock.
That's exactly right. I knew it would give it away. That's exactly right. Well done, my friend. Well done.
Thank you.
The Rock.
Is there a better action movie from the... Yes, The Rock.
With Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, Nicolas Cage, and Ed Harris. Absolutely phenomenal movie.
Phenomenal movie. I've never seen it.
Autumn had never seen it.
I've never seen it.
I couldn't believe it.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen The Rock?
No.
Man, I'm coming to Chicago in a few weeks, right, to do the Geeks thing. Man, I'm telling you what, Tom. You and me, a gallon of borscht soup, and The Rock... Man, we're gonna have ourselves a little night. We're going to have ourselves a good time.
I got to give it to him. I don't know if it stands the test of time. It probably does. But
oh, it absolutely does.
But in its day, it was a good movie.
Oh, it's so good.
I never saw it.
Well, and just to transition the conversation slightly, speaking of underrated movies, underrated actors, Nicolas Cage, way underrated. Because my man, he just A-plus in The Rock, A-plus in Con Air, right? A-plus in Raising Arizona, totally different role.
A-plus in Family Man. A-plus in Valley Girl.
Are we even going to talk about the National Treasure?
A-plus in Valley Girls. For Sadnok, Face Off was an A+.
A+ in Valley Girl. You can't ever forget about Valley Girl.
I'm not a Travolta guy. I'm not really a Face Off guy. But the rest of them.
Wasn't Nicolas Cage in that too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gone in 60 Seconds? Come on, man. Like, he doesn't get nearly enough credit.
Agreed.
Like, if you don't like Nicolas Cage, then you just don't like America. That's all I can say.
The vampire movie he was good in. He's done some good stuff.
Vampire movie? Really?
Yeah.
All right. I can't listen to you two. I mean, your taste in movies.
I'm just saying, like, The Rock really, man, it's so good. I mean,
I wouldn't have guessed The Rock.
Later.
I had a look. Nicolas Cage was in Valley Girls 1983. Sazonov has been this way his entire life. This is amazing.
Hey, you asked for a Nicolas Cage movie that nobody ever guesses. Valley Girl. Love it.
Yeah. That must have been his first. Was that his first movie? It must have been. I mean, that must have been number one or number two.
Could have been. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, Nicolas Cage, it is. Borscht Soup, it is. Gentlemen, let's do a little finance. I think we're ready now. I'm all ready to go. John, get us going here on the title slide. So we are going to talk this morning about trading short-term convexity, gentlemen. I know you guys are always up for a little convex discussion, so that's exactly what we're going to do here this morning with everybody's favorite topic, some zero DTE and some one DTE options. So, John, go ahead and get us going here on the introductory slide so that we can just kind of roll this thing out. So, very short-term options such as zero DTE or one DTE cycles are now commonplace alternatives that traders have at their disposals. And these extremely near-term expirations can be great options for traders looking to trade binary events, such as earnings or FOMC. But given the unique nature of these options, there comes a special type of late cycle risk, extreme convexity. Gentlemen, are you guys using zero DTEs and one DTEs for binary events on a regular basis?
No.
On a regular basis, no.
Why not?
Well, because we've shown in our research that you can choose whatever instrument you want duration-wise, and the dollars at risk is almost works out perfect durationally. So I like the extra time because it gives me an opportunity to adjust and massage the positions.
Adjust. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like one days. I will use them occasionally, but I don't generally like them.
Okay.
All you right. do get a lot of bang for your buck though.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Tommy would be different. Like if you were ever able to get the direction of move correct, you might feel differently. Because when you're able to actually,
he would be unstoppable.
I'm just saying, like when you're actually, I mean, he's batting over for 2024. So if he ever got one or two, it's like, man, the payoff here is pretty nice. You know what I'm saying, Tony?
I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, even if a Tom Sosnoff might not be using zero DTEs and one DTEs for binary events, many of us other common peasants and plebes are using them from time to time. So John, go and hit us here on the next slide. And let's take a look at what we're looking at on this little graph. So when we look at this graphic, if you choose to trade zero DTEs or one DTEs, then what you're going to be battling more than anything is going to be the convexity at the very end of the cycle that namely comes from the extreme levels of gamma that are in the position. So if you look at like this graph, it's just gamma on the y-axis and time on the x-axis. You can see that, you know, around 35, 40 days, The gamma's starting to pick up a tiny bit of steam, not really too much, you know, just from one day to the next. It's not really anything that we need to worry about in terms of adding to our directional exposure. You get to around 21 days. I mean, this is what the research has informed us, you know, to kind of be on the lookout for. You can see the slope of the curve is changing. You can see that the gamma is starting to accelerate a bit more quickly. But then when you get to the very end of the cycle, so with like only 3 days to go, and obviously it would be even, you know, more pronounced if there were only 2 days to go or 1 day to go or 0 days to go, the gamma now, the curve on the actual gamma over time relationship is extremely convex. So now with there being so little time left, with there being so few crystals left in the hourglass, you're going to be up against extremely convex situations, which essentially means if you get the directional move incorrect, it can be very, very painful. Now, if you get it correct, it can be very, very rewarding. But this is essentially what you're up against when it comes to a zero DTE or one DTE play. Tom, were you aware of this gamma relationship over time?
I was, because of all the tasty research. So, I mean, I've been paying, you know, somewhat close attention for the last 13 years.
That's good to know. That's good to know. Because again, you're not paying Anton for all the research he's doing, producing this content to where my man has to sell boar soup on the weekends to get by. But at least you have been paying attention to his results.
Honestly,
Please be back.
Go ahead, Tom. We lost Tony. Go ahead.
Yeah, there was some noise coming through. But it's funny. I had this kind of mixed feelings about whether I should have known, if I wanted to have known this earlier in my career. Like when I was trading on the floor, I really didn't understand how fast gamma accelerated close to expiration, because on the one hand, as floor traders, we made all our money around expiration. And so all the other time you're kind of spinning your wheels. And I feel like if I knew this, I might not have made as much money because I would have been smarter about the risk that I took. And because our edge was different than this edge. But I feel like knowing this, understanding this better now, as a retail, you know, screen-based trader, I feel like it keeps me out of like those really horrible situations. More than anything else, it keeps me out of some really dangerous situations.
So you said this many, many times before, that most of your money was made on expiration day or the days preceding expiration day. Why was that the case? Was it just because there was so much more order flow?
No. It's because, just for the reasons that you're describing right here, that's when the customer had the worst odds. So you remember, you're the counterparty. And so if the customer has the worst odds in that period, then we would have the best odds, right? Because you're just taking the other side of the trade. So you'd have wider markets with the best odds. I mean, in hindsight, I couldn't figure this out at the time. But wider markets with the best odds is clearly, you know, the best way to trade if you're a pit trader.
Of course. But to me, just to push on that a little bit, to me, I'm not quite sure how you're getting the best odds out of this, other than the wider markets. The wider markets is obviously that's your edge. I mean, that's what you're doing.
Well,
but
that's your edge.
That's
your edge, but you also have As a very one-dimensional floor trader, you had the advantage of being able to react quicker than most people, especially when data moved slower and markets were wider. So you had more choices. You had access to a lot more hedge choices than the consumer did. So I could spread things off with other orders that you can't do as a screen-based trader, because you don't know what the other orders are. So the opportunities to adjust and hedge positions were much greater than they are as a screen-based trader. So you take that with the wider markets, you know, and the mechanical kind of edge, and that's where it all comes into play. The customer's most disadvantaged when their deltas can go from 0 to 100 in one tick. And you are most advantaged when that happens, because you are actually prepared for it. It's all you do.
Right, exactly. Okay, so that so this is very interesting. So it sounds to that, so that's extremely helpful. So it sounds to me like what you're saying is, not only does there or did there exist some informational asymmetry, a la what we talked about last week, but you actually had the informational advantage, is what you are suggesting, because you had access to things more easily than other traders, customers, retail had access to. Is that not what you just said?
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah.
Okay, so there is information. I just want everyone that's listening.
It's not information. It's not information. You had access to order flow. That it's just order flow.
It is information. It's just access to information.
It's just order flow, Jim.
How is order flow not information?
Well,
when I say information, I'm not talking about, you know, what's printed in the Wall Street Journal. Of course, that's one version of it, but I mean order flow, and again, access to other markets more quickly than the next person. Then Ed coming around the corner, like we talked about last week. That's absolutely informational asymmetry. Now I'm fascinated because I'm like, man, the market makers had the informational asymmetric relationship in their favor.
No.
I'm blown away, Tom. Tom, this changes everything. I have to go back in and change my own dissertation now because of all this new information. This is great.
No, you're thinking of it in the wrong terms. Information. Order flow could be considered information to some people in certain situations, but that's not how we used it. Order flow to a trader is just opportunity. So like the more order flow there is, the better the chances are that you could find something that you need.
Yeah, to hedge against the stuff you already have.
That's right.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. But again, because you have access to that, you have a huge informational advantage. Okay, anyway, I think Tony might be back. That would be good.
I am back. Tony touched something he wasn't supposed to.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I just, you'll have to go back and watch the last 5 minutes. I can't even recreate what just happened, but it was unbelievable where Tom basically just admitted to all the things we talked about last week. And so you have to definitely go check that out.
He just didn't want me to hear it. That's why.
I don't think he did. I don't think he did.
Yeah,
no, I think that was it.
Yep, yep.
Okay, so dealing with gamma changes and convexity, John, go ahead and go to the next slide for us. So what do we do, right? Whether we're, you know, zero options, zero DT options, one DT options, like how do we handle this? Well, here are a couple things to think about. Normally, a lot of times the zero and one DT traders, they're wanting to engage with maximal price convexity because they're buying the options. And they want to have all that directional steam pick up in their favor if they get the directional move right and they're looking for a big score. That's generally how most of the public is going to think about a zero DT option or a one DT option. But obviously inside the Tasty universe, we're looking at things very, very differently. So what do we do when it comes to potentially selling zero DT options or one DT options? Well, I think it commands a different approach and a very, very different set of, you know, criteria that you might look for. I don't think that, and I'm going to be curious what you guys have to say about this, but I don't think selling naked zero or one DT options, I don't think it's worth it. I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze. I think you're getting in at the worst possible time, kind of like you mentioned a minute ago, Tom. You have no time to adjust. You have no time to take advantage of like the first, you know, half of the cycle theta that's so reliable that our research has shown over and over again. It's like you're missing out on all of those things and you're picking this up at the very end when directional moves can hurt you the most. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, I think if you're going to go in and play this game around binary events or, you know, just SPX trades or whatever, I think defined risk strategies are going to make the most sense. Could be an iron condor. I know Liz and Jenny love their wide iron condors. Around like 11 or 12 o'clock, they ride them to the end of the day. And they, I mean, Jenny was telling me about them when we were in, were we in Houston last? I think we were in Houston together last. She was telling me about that. You've got iron flies, or you can even do expected move butterflies, which I know is a long premium strategy, but it kind of behaves more like a short premium strategy because it is a butterfly. And so I don't know. I think if you're going to play zero DT, one DT options in the face of all this convexity, I think you got to do it to find risk with iron condors, iron flies, and butterflies. But gentlemen, what do you guys think?
We would definitely agree with that. Tomas?
I agree with you. I think if you're going to go, if that's the question, yes, that's then Tony's answer is right. We agree with you.
Do you think there's ever a situation where selling naked premium makes sense in a zero DT or one DT world.
Sure. If you're directionally inclined, absolutely. Or if you have, there's a couple of situations. A, if you're directionally inclined, and B, if, you know, if things are crazy out of line, super rich. I mean, we're going to do a piece right after this, Jim, that's going to suggest that there's absolutely mathematical, statistical evidence that our research team put together that suggests that if implied volatility is super high, like you get to those points, it is always better to shorten the duration. Like, like we always take duration for granted. Like we try to normalize duration and say 45 days is optimal mechanics wise, manage to 21, blah, blah, blah. But what we're going to show in the next piece that we do is that if all things are equal and volatility is really low for whatever reason, you want to extend duration because it gives you like, it synthetically gives you a higher, you know, a better chance of success and gives you a higher synthetic volatility. If volatility is super high, you want to shorten duration because the advantage is on the shorter side. And we'll show the statistics behind that in the next piece. So I think that, you know, again, all things equal, we try to normalize everything. But if there's extreme situations of low volatility or high volatility, then I think you do exactly what a research says. You shorten the high volatility, you extend the long volatility.
Now that's fascinating. And I don't want to be giving out the, you know, the climactic ending before I should be, because this is the segment that's gonna follow mine. But what is extreme? What are extreme levels? Like, how are we defining extreme levels? I'm just curious. Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know how they're defining it. I would say that extreme on volatility would have to be a minimum of over 30, because we don't get over 30 very often. And on the other side, I would say probably, you know, under 12 and a half. I'm just
under
guessing.
12?
12, yeah. 12 and a half, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's good stuff. No, that's really good stuff. I'm looking forward to the next piece. That's gonna be awesome. I mean, if Anton can take a break from, you know, baking up some boar soup, it's gonna be some good stuff. So let's get him a few takeaways, and we'll get him on to the market measure. So very short term options like zero or one DT options offer traders unique ways to customize the risk return profiles of their portfolios. But with that customization comes a different set of hurdles and obstacles that traders need to be aware of, such as the extreme levels of convexity risk that are baked into these near-term expiration cycles. There we go. Tony, you got your internet bill paid?
I'm all good. I paid my bill.
There we go.
Signing off. Good job at it, Dr. Jim. Your silence is deafening. We're going to take a quick 90-second break and come back. We got more things. As he mentioned, a market measure next. Thank you, Dr. Jim.
Yep.
Happy Monday.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.